Happy Throwback Thursday, everybody. Kevin here, and today I'm dusting off episode 23 with Dr. Stan Beacham, a sports psychologist. Now, this Stan's an interesting guy, and this turned out to be one of our most popular episodes. I don't know if people like sports psychology or what it was that triggered all of the interest. But this, you'll hear, I'm very interested in these topics. And fascinating to hear him talk about, you know, not striving for perfection. And, you know, I've learned kind of a lot of sports psychologists, it's all about focusing on what you can control and not necessarily the outcome of the game or a perfect record. Anyway, the popular episode, I wanted to bring it back front and center for your attention. Enjoy.
Would you like to accelerate your career and reach your full potential in just minutes a day? Welcome to the LeadX Show with New York Times bestselling author and Inc. 500 entrepreneur, Kevin Cruz.
How do high achievers think differently to reach peak performance? Hello, everyone. Kevin Cruz here. Today, we're going to learn the ways that ultra-successful people think differently. But first, don't forget to sign up for our newsletter at leadx.org because each super short issue has actionable tips to advance your career and fulfill your potential. Visit leadx.org. Our guest today is a sports psychologist and director and founding member of the Leadership Resource Center in Atlanta, Georgia. He's the author of Elite Minds, How Winners Think Differently to Create a Competitive Edge and Maximize Success. Our guest is Dr. Stan Beacham. Welcome, Stan.
Thanks, Kevin. It's good to be with you.
Oh, excited to have you on the show. I loved your book. I already told you pre-show that I think we've got so much to talk about. We'll have you back for a second episode.
Okay. Sounds good.
We'll dive into Elite Minds in just a minute, but I want to start with a couple of questions that our listeners are always curious about. And the first is this notion or even debate about work-life balance. I mean, what do you think about that? Or do you have any tips for people who are trying to achieve it?
Well, I do. I have some, I wouldn't say tips, but I have a belief about it. And basically I think it's rubbish. I think that, it's the kind of the politically correct thing that you're supposed to have work-life balance. My experience has been is that people who really, go deep into their careers and really become successful, they do that by spending a lot of time and energy doing it, right? In other words, if you fall in love with something or someone or some activity, that's what you want to do. And what I think is that people who become, whether to become, you know, great entrepreneurs, great athletes, great artists, they want to do their trade or their profession. And so you can go and spend 12 and 14 or 18 hours a day sometimes and do it. And that's what you want to do. I think that the problem with the work-life balance is that we have a lot of people who use work as a substitute for, you know, the fact that they don't have a life outside of it, or it becomes essentially a drug for them. But I think to get, you know, to fall in love with what you're doing and want to spend a lot of time doing it, I think that's a good thing. And when you do that, there's going to be periods of time where, you know, you're going to spend a bunch of time working or you're going to spend a bunch of time doing something. And I don't see that as a problem. It only becomes a problem if you don't want to be doing it.
Yeah. So when you fall in love with something or someone, you want to maximize your time doing it. So perhaps those who are chasing the trying to get more balance in their life with their work, you know, might be masking that maybe they need to be changing careers or jobs to enjoy what they're doing.
Yeah, I think that's the case. I think it becomes a have to.
Yeah.
And so I believe in spending your time, whether it's work or with people and activities that really bring you joy and purpose. And when you do that, you quit looking at the clock. In other words, the amount of time that you spend, it doesn't really matter. But if I'm doing something that I don't inherently enjoy, or I'm hanging out with people that I don't inherently enjoy being with, I do care about the amount of time that I spend, right?
Yeah.
And I'm thinking I need to end this and get on to the next thing.
Makes a lot of sense. Now, in the intro, Stan, I talked about all of your present day success, and I know you've worked with so many successful athletes. But tell us about a time, you know, maybe earlier in your career when you failed, and what were some lessons you took away from it?
Well, when you thought about that, I thought instead of just a particular time, I think of this theme. In other words, there's a mistake that I make over and over again, right? There. In other words, I haven't learned the lesson yet, so I continue to fail. And it has to do with me having this need to say something or be right about something, disregarding the fact that the other person is not ready to hear it, right?
Right.
And so the lesson has to do with timing. And there may be things that you know or pieces of information that you have as a leader that the fact of the matter is the people that you're working with, they don't want to hear that because they're simply not ready to hear it. And so those lessons tend to be around timing. And really paying attention to, does the person or persons that I'm working with, you know, what's the thing that they need to hear from me more so than what's the thing that I need to say? And I do this all the time because I think we all kind of have our own agenda of things we want to get done. And it really has to do with getting into the flow or the rhythm and quit trying to force something, but really paying attention and trusting that the next thing will happen. So it also has an element of control to it that I think many of us really work hard at wanting to be in control of our lives or control of things. But really, you're the most powerful when you give up control or the need to be in control.
That's great. And I scribbled some notes myself. It was powerful words. It's sort of putting the focus on what do they need, not what do you want to say. That's a great way to put
it. Yeah, that's right. So, but it's a timing issue and it's an awareness of other issues. And that's the mistake that I find myself making over and over again is that I lose, you know, focus of what the other person needs or is this the time to do this yet?
Now, Stan, your book is Elite Minds, How Winners Think Differently to Create a Competitive Edge and Maximize Success. And just starting at the very beginning, you know, you say that in sports, a lot of people tie success to talent. In business, we tend to tie success to experience or we value experience. You say that the primary determinant isn't either of those things. It's mental. You know, why do you say that?
Well, because the athletes that I work with, and I do a lot of corporate work as well, but say when you get to the, you know, the Division I college athlete and the professional athlete. So Division I athletes are basically the top 1% of high school athletes, okay? And then you could argue that professional athletes are another top 5 to 1% of those. So when you get at that level, say, for example, in professional football, the reality is everyone's talented. Mm. Okay. And so Division I sport, everyone's talented. And so I've had the chance now for, you know, the last, you know, 25 years of working with these populations where essentially everyone is talented. I mean, if you go to a Division I college, pretty much every kid on the team was the best kid on their high school team. Right.
Right. Yeah, absolutely.
And they spent their whole childhood being the best kid on their little league team. And so what I'm getting to is what you see is everyone has talent. So then it becomes an issue of who are the kids that really fully maximize their talent? What are the things that get in the way that keep them from realizing their talent? And so you find out things like, we talked about earlier, you know, do you really love the sport? But not only do you love the sport, do you love to practice? Do you love to go to the gym? And so if you've got two kids with equal talent and one kid loves to practice, then his whole experience of practice is going to be different because he's doing something he wants to do.
Right.
At the same time, what you find is that kids who mentally they're in a place where they're okay with themselves, they're not trying to win someone's approval or show that they're good enough, they're just playing the sport out of the joy of it, they have a huge competitive advantage, right? So we know that when human beings, when we're at our best, when we're in the zone, we don't think about ourselves. We're not concerned about ourselves. We don't have an awareness of ourselves. In fact, we don't even think. So what's interesting is we tend to say that people who kind of dabbled in sports psychology, they say, well, the kid who's the better performer, they think differently, right? You've heard this.
Yes.
The reality is not that they think differently. It's that they don't think. It's the absence of thought. It's the absence of cognition. It's the absence of emotion. That really is the advantage.
So Stan, let me interrupt you here because this is great, because I'm going to ask you about, you know, you're getting the point that it's the unconscious mind moves so fast that it triggers faster than our conscious thinking. So we have to actually impact the unconscious. But let's break it down. I mean, so we know that it's a mental game that counts. It's our mind that counts. And in performance, whether it's sports or business.
Well, because the mind is controlling the body, okay?
Right.
You have to think of the brain as the computer system, and you have to think of your belief system as your software, right? So think of it that way, and you can see that you could have an incredible body, right? You could be given gifted, and you could be in great shape. But if the way that your mind is functioning is counter to that, you'll never realize that physical potential.
Right. But fundamentally, I'm not sure everybody even understands the way that computer works. So I think most of us out here, us amateurs, we think our mind and our body works like this. I'm driving down the road and somebody cuts me off. So there's an action out in the world, and I think that action makes me mad. So someone cuts me off, I'm angry, and because I'm angry, I have the thought, that guy is a jerk and I wish I could get him and I really hate that guy. So I think it's action, emotion, and then thought, but it's not that way, right?
Well, I, you know, here again, you could debate this. I think for most people that for the person that's listening and say, okay, what do I do with all this? The starting place is to become conscious of your own thought process. So okay. most of us, we go through the day and we're thinking all day long. That's what the mind does. Okay. It thinks, and you're either aware of the thought or you're not, but you're thinking all the time. And it really is helpful to be able to stop and say, isn't it interesting right now, say, for example, sitting in traffic, isn't it interesting right now that of all the things I could be doing with my mind, all the thoughts that I could be entertaining, I've picked this one, okay? Right. Mm-hmm. Or this guy just cut me off. Isn't it interesting that of all the emotional responses that I could have, I picked this one? And what I mean by that is just becoming conscious of that, because once you become conscious of it, now you're making a choice. If you're functioning unconsciously, you're not really making a choice, right?
Right.
It's just everything's happening to me. And you'll hear people who, you know, people who are victims, right? They'll sit around and what they want to tell you is, let me tell you what happened to me, mm-hmm. right? And that's very different than saying, Kevin, let me tell you what I did today, you know?
Right.
Let me tell you what I created today. But most of us, our story is, let me tell you what happened to me today. And that's a byproduct of unconscious living.
Right. So you talk about our unconscious mind, which is another way of saying our belief system, our unconscious yes. belief system.
Right. It's the things that you hold as true that you don't even know that you hold. Right.
Right? You don't even know that you have these truths that may or may not be true. And this unconscious mind is what then will drive some of our conscious thoughts, and those thoughts could lead to behaviors, right?
Yes. Yes. So for example, for an athlete, say going into a competition, if my belief about myself is I'm not as good as other people and I'm not as good as these other guys. Okay. So I carry that with me all the time, the sense of not being good enough or not being adequate. Then you can see that there's certain thoughts that I'm going to have, which is, you know, I need to play really well to do well. And so that belief system of what you hold is true is going to lead to a certain way of thinking, which is going to lead to a certain way of acting. So if you think of people who consistently win, you would say, well, they win all the time because they want to win, right? They want it bad enough. The reality is that's not true at all, is that people that win and succeed at a high level, they don't actually think about winning. They go into in other words, if you're going into a situation, okay, and you believe that you're going to do well in that situation, the fact of the matter is you don't think about how you're going to do. You see what I'm saying?
Yes.
Because it's going to go well. So in other words, if I know I'm going to win the game, then why would I even think about winning the game? But if there's some uncertainty as to how I'm going to do, or I'm going to win or not, I'm going to spend a lot of time thinking about that.
And in terms of these unconscious beliefs in a work setting, is it fair to say, I mean, it really could be dramatic. For example, if I'm young, early in my career, And I just think this, you know, I'm too young to be a director in my company. You know, that's going to impact either I might not go for that promotion or I might go and be interviewed for that promotion. But I go in there thinking I don't got it. Unconsciously, I just might think I don't got a shot at it. And that could affect my performance in the interview.
Yeah. Yeah. What I would say to that person is, number one, don't do your job with the intention of getting promoted or recognized. Mm-hmm. Okay. Just do your job to the best of your ability. In other words, if I start my career with the belief that I'm going to have a successful career and I'm going to get a lot of cool opportunities, and when I get an opportunity, I know I'm going to nail it, okay? Then when I go to work, what I'm thinking about doing is doing my job to the best of my ability, right? I think the kid who goes to work every day and they're trying to win someone's approval so that they can get a promotion or a raise, people sense that.
Yeah.
And you know that guy, you work with him, and you don't trust him because you think he has some ulterior, you know, motive or agenda. And what I'm saying is the best way to get a raise, the best way to get recognized is by don't worry about it. Just do your job really well. And the other people that are competent around you, they're going to see that you're competent and they're going to offer you opportunities. And I get this all the time in the companies I work with, the young people, where they come and say, you know, I want to get a raise. Let's talk about or a promotion. How do you do that? And I say, you're not going to like my answer. And they go, what do you mean? I said, don't try to get promoted. Just do your work really, really well, you know, with a lack of concern about what you're going to get for it or how you're going to be rewarded. And when senior people, do you see that? It'll be so refreshing that here's a person who just takes joy in doing their job really well. They're going to be drawn to you and they're going to want to give you more responsibility.
And Stan, let me just make sure I'm clear. Let's do another kind of business example. So if, let's say I'm a sales professional, you know, going out making sales calls to companies. So you're saying, look, you should have that belief system, like I will be a successful sales professional in my career. I'm going to have a successful career, but I'm not going to care whether this one particular client is going to give me that $1 million contract. I just show up and be the best value adder professional that I can be.
Well, yeah, the way I would say that is that when you're walking into the sales meeting, okay, and this is the same in sport, you either believe that you're going to get the sale or not. Right.
Okay.
And so what I'm saying is, if you go in with the belief that I'm going to get the sale, with the realization that sometimes I won't, but every time I walk into a sales call, I expect that they're going to say yes. Then what that allows me to do is, instead of thinking about what I need to do to close the sale, okay,
right,
what it allows me to do is really focus on the customer, really listen to them, make sure I'm answering their questions, aware of their concerns, and giving them what they want. Okay.
Right.
So in other words, trying to close the sale or get someone to do what I want to do is actually a distraction from that which is going to allow you to be successful.
And this is but this is harder because our unconscious beliefs are unconscious. We don't know what all of our beliefs are. So what do we do? You know, let's say whether I'm a pitcher who really wants to think we're going to win the game, I'm going to, you know, get 9 strikeouts, but there's that great hot batter that's been batting 450 lately I'm a little worried about, or I'm that sales professional. Yeah, you know, I can say that I'm going to win this deal, but at the back of my mind, I know we're up against a tough competitor and budgets are tight. Like, what do we do to massage that unconscious or change to really anchor that belief system?
Well, here's the reality of human beings, right, is that we're dynamic and we're always changing. So the fact of the matter is, on Monday, let's go back to the salesperson. On Monday, every time I called on someone, I thought I was going to get a yes and get their business. But I made 6 sales calls on Monday and everybody said no. So now it's Tuesday and all of a sudden, I'm not feeling so confident.
Right.
Right. And so this is, you see this in sport too, where athletes go from having a lot of confidence to don't. It's true for all of us. It's true for the best. The question is then when I've lost that confidence, if you will, which is really a change of thinking, how do I get back to it?
Mm.
Okay. And so it really goes back to looking at the bigger picture, which is I really believe in the long term, everything's going to work out for me. So one of the things that I talk with my clients about is, We all have 2 fundamental beliefs that drive the whole thing. The first is a belief of self, and I either believe that I'm good enough or I'm not good enough. The people who don't think they're good enough, they don't say that. They just say, I need to be better. Mm. Okay. So what's under this insatiable need to be better is a belief that I'm not good enough. So you either believe you're enough or you're not enough. And then you have a belief about the future. And your belief about the future is it's either going to work out for me or it's not going to work out for me. Okay. So after I have a bad day, let's say Monday, I got a bunch of no's, what I'm going to remind myself is go back to is, look, I believe it's going to work out for me. The fact that I had a bad day, of course I had a bad day because everybody has a bad day.
Right.
You know, one of the things that's a problem with our hero worship society is, you know, we think of these people who are these great folks, as successful people. We don't think that they struggle and experience failure the way that we do. But the fact of the matter is they do.
Right.
In other words, most people's definition of success is the avoidance of failure. People who are really successful will tell you their definition of success is their response to failure. And they would actually argue that you have to have failure. In other words, there's no such thing of success without failure, right? I mean, there's no such thing as light without dark. The fact of the matter is we need both. And when you get to that point where you really understand that your what you would call your failures, or when, which is really it didn't go my way,
right,
that you actually need that because that's informative and that's fertilizer for your soul. I mean, that's a crucial piece in your growth. Then you change your response to failure.
Yeah, if you can truly understand that, right? So you either win or you learn. Failure isn't really. There's not really a negative. And if you're not failing, you probably aren't moving fast enough or being innovative enough.
As well. One of the things that I say to people who get really perfectionist about it, let's use a sales rep. I say, I want you to think for a second. Imagine from here on out that every time you went on a sales call, you got a yes. Okay. Or to an athlete, imagine every time you played a game, you were going to win. Okay. What do you think would happen to you over time? And the answer is, you would get bored. You would lose interest.
Right.
You would actually lose some of the joy of it. This is why the best athletes want to compete against the other best athletes, right? Because they realize there's a chance that I may not win. You see that?
Yeah, that's what makes the game interesting, right?
Yes, but what's interesting is they're not even cognizant of that. They just they say, I'm upset because I didn't win. And I said, yeah, but think about if you won all the time. I mean, or just, you know, listeners, think about if everything in life went your way and you got everything you wanted, what would happen to you? The answer is you'd become miserable.
That's right. That's right.
You see what I'm saying? This is why these, you know, heroes, you know, these successful people end up imploding and killing themselves. And it happens all the time in our culture, is because they just get to the point where, you know, they become sick and tired of themselves and the reputation that they have and how people just think they're so awesome. They can't stand that anymore.
And Stan, let me rewind you to you said something quickly, but it really hit me. You said, you know, we really have to stop trying to get better, or that better can get in the way of us being our best. And I'll be honest, like often on this show, you know, I say, hey, we're bringing this show so that every day you can get a little bit better. So
absolutely.
Why is that bad? Take me to school on this one.
Well, it's not so much it's bad. It's just it's not the best path forward. OK, so what we got to start with, Kevin, is that we all live in a culture and a society that's obsessed with better. Mm-hmm. Right. And we've been taught since day one that in order to be successful, you have to always want to get better. And that the moment you quit trying to get better, then the competition is going to pass you up. Right.
Yeah.
And so, and I've believed that for most of my career. And what I've just learned, and this has just been in the last 5 years, is I really sat with this, you know, obsession with better and really said, you know, what is this about? Like, what is this born out of? And what I realized in really looking at it from all angles is that the reason that we most of us want to be better is because we fundamentally believe that we're not good enough yet. Okay. You with me?
Yeah, I understand.
And so the problem with better is about the future. Okay. Like you can't get better now. You can't be better now, but you can in the future. And when you start looking at performance, what you see is that performance is a now thing. In other words, everything that you do in the now, you do in the present moment.
Right.
And so as I'm speaking to you right now in this interview, if I realize I can't do this any better than I can do it, right? In other words, all I can do right now is the best that I can do. Now, the question then becomes is, can I do my best right now? And the answer is I can. And it's true for all of us. Whatever the situation that you're in, okay, even if it's not an ideal situation, you can still make the best of it. You can still do your best. And what I'm saying is that's all you can do. And if I consistently do my best, what's going to happen to me over time? And you would say, well, you get better. In other words, you grow and develop consistently doing your best.
Right.
You follow me?
Yes.
And what I want people to understand is no matter what you think about yourself, you are good enough to do your best right now. And no matter how hard you try, you can't be better than what you are. So I know at first it kind of looks like a play on words, right?
Right.
But what we gotta understand is this culture that's obsessed with better is also an anxious culture. In other words, 25% of the American population has a diagnosable mental disorder, and 80% of that, or 20% of us, have an anxiety disorder. And anxiety is about the future. And when the mind goes to the future, you quit performing at your best. So what we know about when human beings are at their best, they don't go forward in the future. They don't go backwards in the past. They stay present, and the mind gets really quiet and you function optimally. And the problem that I have with better is it keeps pulling you to the future.
And Stan, I wanted to let our listeners know that, you know, you've got some video clips on your website of you doing some speaking engagements and workshops. And there was a very powerful clip on this topic about, you know, we're living in the richest time, materialistically, the wealthiest time in history. And yet we are also at record levels of anxiety and depression. And, you know, we're using all these coping mechanisms.
Yeah. And substance abuse and obesity.
Right.
You know, and so we're doing all these things with the attempt of I just want to feel good about myself. Right. Because I don't yet. And what I'm getting to is this thing that we've been teaching our children and now ourselves as adults is this obsession with better. It is not serving us. It is not helping us. That what we really need to move towards is create a culture. If you're a leader, just go to people and say, look, all I'm asking you to do is do the best that you can. And I'll say this to coaches. When I'm working with college teams, I'll say to the coach with the team sitting here, I said, if you can get all these players on your team to perform the best that they can, tell me what will happen this year. And invariably the coach says, oh, we'd win championships.
Right.
Okay. And then I say to the athletes, how many of you are capable of doing your best? And what they realize is I am capable. And then I'll ask them, I did this recently with a collegiate tennis team that's a top five team right now, won multiple national championships. And I asked about 12 guys in a room, and I said, let me ask you guys a question. When is the last time you walked off the court? And as you were walking off the court, you had the thought, I've just played the best tennis that I'm capable of playing. And what was interesting is only two of the 12 guys said within the last 12 months they've done that. And one of them was a top player. He said in the last 3 months. Wow. The rest of the guys – okay. And I'm talking about, these are good athletes, right? They're on the top five collegiate team. The other 10 guys says it's been more than a year since I've had that experience. And if, you know, if you're a leader of an organization, whether it be sport or business, what I would say is if you can get the people on your team to perform at their best, then you're doing your job at a high level.
Yeah, that's what it's about. And on that note, Stan, final question then. I'm not gonna ask our listeners to get a little better today, but we want to help them to perform at their best today. So what's one specific thing that you could challenge them to try? Again, whether it's at work or somewhere else.
Okay. Let me tell you this way. When you use a better model, okay, in other words, when people say I'm trying to do something better, usually you have an activity and you're going to do more or less of it, right?
Mm-hmm.
You see what I'm saying?
Yeah.
In order to be better, I need to do this more or less. If you toss that away and say, okay, I want to be my best, or I want to be of the best in my industry or my sport. When you shift that mind thinking from better to best, what happens is instead of doing more or less of activities, what you will find is that there's things that you currently do, you will stop doing them. And what you'll also find is there's things that you don't do that you'll start doing. So what I would suggest to people is pick something that you currently don't do that if you said, if I was the best at this or my company was the best, right, this is something that we would do that we don't do. And at the same time, if we were the best, what's something that we currently do that we would stop doing?
Right.
You with me?
Absolutely.
And just pick one, either something that I don't currently do that I need to do or something that, you know, or you know, flip it over. So you start or stop something. And it doesn't have to be a big thing. It could be a little thing. You know, for athletes, when we do this, it's, well, you know, I need to drink more water, you know, or I don't drink, or let me say it differently. You know, I don't drink water during practice. I need to start drinking water during practice. You know, I don't have a bottle of water beside my bedside. I need to have a bottle of water beside my bedside. You follow me?
Yeah, it does. Right. So it doesn't have to be a huge shift in yourself or your practices. It even one little start doing this or stop doing that can make a big impact.
Well, I think what most people think of is that they need to make these big improvements. So I work a lot with golfers and I talk about, you know, what's a 1% improvement? Well, it's about, you know, 0.7 strokes per round, or in two rounds, in four rounds, it's three strokes. Mm. Well, for a golfer, if you improve by three strokes over four rounds, that's a big deal, but that's a 1% improvement.
Right.
And I think if most people understood that the impact of these 1% improvements and how they really could be pretty altering, they would do it. But most people think I need to make these big, huge changes, you know, and I can't do it.
Right.
But most people see themselves as, yeah, I could make a 1% improvement. But what they fail to understand is how significant that would be.
Yeah, the leverage from picking the right thing.
Yes. And then when you do one, then you feel like, well, I can do another one. And a lot of it really becomes with being conscious. You know, for me personally, one of the things I've realized is that I eat unconsciously. I don't think about what I eat or why I'm eating. What I've learned in working with elite athletes is they think about food as fuel, right? Most of us, we think, okay, what would taste good right now?
Right.
Elite athletes think in terms of what do I need to put in my body right now that would be helpful to me. They're very conscious. You know, I work with Olympic level gymnasts. They're really super conscious. But just being conscious of what am I eating? Why am I eating it? Why am I putting this in my body? What is this going to do to me? After I finish eating this, how am I going to think about myself? Just bringing consciousness to it will change the decisions that you make.
And Stan, right on that point, I mean, I think not only being aware that food is fuel, so be thoughtful about what you're consuming, but instead of that mindless, you know, in my case, bring that bag of chips onto the couch as I watch TV, and I don't even remember that I just ate an entire bag of chips. You know,
yeah.
There's a book by the Buddhist monk Thich Nhat Hanh called Savor, and he said it's not just food choice, but mindful eating. Like if you actually felt the piece of fruit in your hand and experienced the chewing it, just mindfulness would cut back on your calories and your consumption. And people who can adopt this and stick with it, I mean, they shed tons of weight and really transforms their life.
Yeah. Yeah. Just, I mean, I know it's this time, you know, it's the first of the year and there's a lot of people, the number one thing that Americans want to change is their weight. Right.
Right. Right.
So you probably got a lot of listeners who are saying, I want to lose weight.
Right.
Just think about, why am I eating this? What is this going to do to me when I put it in my body? Do I want this in my body?
Right.
You know, what is the effect it's going to have? And realize, well, of all the things that I could put in my body, is this the one that I want to put in there? And just being conscious and realize I'm making a choice, right?
Yeah.
That changes the whole thing. The thing I say to people is you are not your thoughts and you're not your emotions. And most people don't understand what that means. Like they don't separate themselves from their thoughts, you know, and you really see it with emotions. People won't say, I feel sad. They'll say, I am sad.
Right.
People don't say, I feel anxious. They'll say, I am anxious. So one of the things I see is that once you become that emotion, then it owns you. The person who says, I am anxious, they're going to have a hard time getting unanxious. the person who says, I'm making myself anxious, or I'm letting you, you know, make me anxious, now they're having a different experience with it. It's just the ability, we have the ability to observe our thought process, and we have the ability to observe our emotional process. And if you just did that, you're not going to change your life. You're going to transform your life. And most people, they don't do that.
Yeah, it all starts there. And on that note, Stan, how can people find out more about you, your company, and your book?
Yeah. So best way to track me down is the website. It's drstanbeacham.com. Beacham is spelled B-E-E-C-H-A-M. There's no periods in it. drstanbeacham.com. You can, you know, get to me through there. The book Elite Minds, you can go to the website and purchase it. You can go to Amazon and purchase it. So that's the best way to track me down.
All right, friends, you've just been mentored by a sports psychologist, Dr. Stan Beacham. How cool is that? Check out his book on Amazon.com or your favorite bookstore. You can get the links he mentioned and show notes from this interview over at leadx.org. And one more thing, if you got even one new idea from today's show, please take a minute and leave a short, honest review on iTunes or Stitcher, because the more reviews a podcast gets, the more likely it's going to be shown to new listeners. Until next time, my friends, remember, you don't need a title to be a leader. It's not about power or authority. Leadership is influence. How are you going to lead today?